Hi, I'm Paul Marinelli, and welcome to my Talk to Motive podcast. Today, we're joined by the most prominent identity in the automotive aftermarket industry on this side of the world, Mr. Stuart Charity, the CEO of the Australian Automotive Aftermarket Association, who celebrated his 20th anniversary in the role at the recent record-shattering 2026 AAA Expo held in Melbourne from May 14 to 16. Welcome and congratulations, Stuart.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here, and doesn't time fly?
It does indeed. I can remember when you started, so that says a lot about my age as well. But can we reflect on what you saw of the industry when you started 20 years ago and where it is now? Because it was vastly different.
Yeah, look, it was. The industry was different. Our association was different. So I'd had a bit to do with the aftermarket industry from an export point of view, because I'd worked with Austrade as the automotive industry specialist. So I'd worked with a lot of our exporters on helping them internationalise. So I kind of had a good understanding of the industry and the potential. But what I saw back then was, from a supply chain point of view, a lot of family-owned entrepreneurs that had built these amazing businesses, businesses like Disc Brakes Australia or Australian Clutch and so on, that had taken their ARB, had taken their products to the world. What we see these days is a far more consolidated and more corporatized industry. So back then, for instance, Burson Auto Parts was still a family-owned, predominantly Victorian business. There are a lot of independent resellers and retailers and much more independently owned supply chain. So it was more fragmented, but it was really vibrant. It was a great domestic industry and an expanding international opportunity. And I just saw the potential. I love the people. And I saw real potential in the association as well to grow and help grow and protect the industry.
And going back to that time, and the industry really didn't run its own expo. That's something that happened under your watch. Can you tell us about how that developed?
Yeah, so there was a show in the market. It was called the Australian Automotive Trade Fair, or AATF. Show, and it was independently owned, and the AAA had an agreement with the organisers, which I think worked for quite a few years, where they would get a kind of profit share arrangement. But increasingly, the industry got and the association, the relationship was fractured. There's a few key things. One was that they were insistent on running the show every year, and the industry wanted a biannual show. There was a lot of discretionary pricing and discounting for mates and that sort of thing. And again, the industry wanted everyone to be treated equally, and the profits weren't. They were obviously going to a private individual rather than back into the industry for industry development. So. It was actually, it did predate me. It was 2003 when the AAA decided to launch their own show. It was called the AAA Trade Show then. So they ran one. It was quite a small one in 2003, slightly bigger in 2005. And I came in 2006, rebranded the show, launched the Collision Repair Expo. We had the size, the footprint, pretty well that we've got today, which was 21,000 square metres. So the 2007 show was my first, and that was the biggest show that we'd run, and it's really gone from strength to strength. Funnily enough, the competitor's show was still in the market when we started. They were trying to run against us, but it really only lasted another year, and then that folded up, and we've been the sole show since then.
And as I said in the intro, you come off an extraordinarily successful expo this year, record-shattering crowds and exhibitor numbers. Tell us all about that growth.
Yeah, well, it's been kind of an amazing ride. So we did, I guess, from a trajectory point of view, we had massive growth in numbers and whatever in from 07, 09 through to about 2013. Then I've got to say, it wasn't a rapid decline, but there was this sort of incremental show-on-show, slight decrease Then obviously we had COVID. 2019 was the last show we did pre-COVID. And then we ran it again in 2022. That was a smaller show and it was COVID affected. And I think at that point in time, there was a lot of people kind of scratching their head thinking, you know, our trade show's dead in the water because we haven't been able to run one for 3 years and so on. And then we've come out in 24. We got a record attendance of 13,500. And mind you, this is trade only, so it's not open to the public. And close to a sellout. And then this last show, we had 100% sellout of space, so 400 exhibitors. We had over 15,000 trade visitors, so that was 15% up on our record. We had record engagement. We had nearly 4,000 people at our seminars and on-site training and activations. It basically smashed every record that we had. So, yeah, trade shows are alive and well. And you know why? It's about the connection of the people. It's about the new technology and all the changes that are happening in the industry. And there's now a real appetite for knowledge from particularly workshops out there. I think they realise that they can't keep doing what they've been doing, you know, for the last 20 years. They do need to change, and they were there in big numbers, really soaking up the information and comparing different equipment and making decisions about their business going forward.
They certainly were, and it is a matter of survival, isn't it? And we're seeing so many workshop owners and technicians trying to learn, trying to get as much info as they can, and that record attendance speaks volumes for that. You touched on something, and what I wanted to get to is face-to-face interaction. This is what makes trade shows what they are, and I think during COVID, we really noticed that there is no substitute for face-to-face interaction. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Business is about people, really. Yeah, we obviously have products, but really all the business is done between people, and this industry is so interrelated. It's, you know, people think, oh, you know, it's just getting car parts to workshops to put in, you know, in the vehicle. But in some cases, companies that are supplier or competitors in one space are suppliers in the other, and so on. So there's all these interrelationships, and I think the other unique thing about this industry, you know, and I think, you know, to be honest, a lot of it's been driven by the AAAA, but companies can be fierce competitors, you know, during the week, and then they understand that the industry is bigger than that competition between those companies, so they can come together, they can have a beer, or more importantly, they can sit around a table and talk about how we grow and protect the entire industry. And then they go back and compete. But we're all trying to grow the pie. So the AAAA has been really good at bringing all the voices together and getting the whole industry behind our initiatives. And whether it's Expo, whether it's our advocacy or what have you, it's all about getting people together and working through what is a very complex and rapidly changing environment. But if we working together, we're sharing knowledge and we're upskilling and we're tackling the challenges together. That's what we've always done and that's what we'll continue to do.
Yes, and it does work extremely well in terms of the level of cooperation between companies and competitors. In 2017, we saw the last of mass car manufacturing in Australia. We saw that end at that point. And the mantle really got handed over to the automotive aftermarket as Australia's car industry. Would you agree that mantle's been handed over in a big way?
Yeah, look, it has. It was interesting that, you know, I mean, no one wanted to see the car industry demise happen like it did. But the reality was that the aftermarket was, you know, has always designed and manufactured and exported products. As I said, we, you know, 20 years ago, and more than 20 years ago, in my previous role, we were working with aftermarket manufacturing. But the car industry did soak up a lot of the attention and a lot of the government focus and support.
Yep.
And there was a kind of narrative going around when they were trying to get more money all the manufacturing would go. Now, we never believed that, and that hasn't been the case. And it's been an interesting kind of case study. When the industry did shut down, there were predictions of, you know, mass unemployment and all those people that worked in the, not so much the car companies themselves, but the tier one and tier two and tier three component suppliers that they would all go out of business. But that actually didn't happen. A lot of those did diversify or kind of shift to pivot back into aftermarket and into other areas. And you know, we've actually grown through exports, and we've created new industries. Like for instance, Walkinshaw, I think, is a classic example. You know, they used to do the Holdens, especially Holden special vehicles. They're now converting, you know, Rams and Silverados from left-hand drive to right-hand drive. And you go to their factory in Tullamarine, and you know, they've got 1,200 people working there, and it's like a car manufacturing plant back in the day. So, yeah, the industry has pivoted and it's grown, both in domestic sales, but in particular international sales.
Yep, Australian products found all over the world. And with that, we've got more big trade shows coming up this year. And the big daddy, of course, being Automechanica Frankfurt, coming up in September. And a lot of Australians taking part, either exhibiting or visiting. It gets bigger and bigger every year.
Yeah, it sure does. I think I said we had 400 exhibitors and 5 acres of floor space. So Automechanica is our show on absolute steroids. There's 16 halls, I think, or they've probably built a few more since I was there 2 years ago. You got to get a bus from one side to the other. A lot of the halls are multi-level. So you're talking 5,000-plus exhibitors and 300 or more thousand visitors from all around the world. So that is the granddaddy of all trade shows and where the aftermarket come together to see the innovation and what's happening from a future trend point of view. So we're actually really excited this year for the first time in a long time. We were talking about, you know, the government focus and support for aftermarket. That kind of went away for a little while from an export point of view. But, with the tariffs that are happening in the US, the government launched a program called Accessing New Markets Initiative, or ANMI, and we've been fortunate to be able to get significant funding under that program to help our local manufacturers and exporters develop their businesses and new ones enter the market into Europe, into Middle East, which is a little bit problematic at the moment, and into Southeast Asia. So we're actually going to, for the first time in, I think, about 12 years, we'll actually have a national pavilion at Automechanica Frankfurt. We've just launched it, and we're hoping to have about 15 companies exhibiting on that, and we're going to have a package of other activities that where people can come along, and we'll be doing events and other things to really promote Australian capability. So we're really excited about Frankfurt this year.
It's going to be an excellent showcase for Australian companies who really are kicking goals around the world, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a little known fact that we actually export about $800 million a year worth of Australian designed and manufactured product around the world. And, you know, Australian engineers and product designers are some of the most sought after talents all around the world. And our products are renowned all around the world, particularly in, you know, the four-wheel drive and performance modification space. So they're normally parts that are not bought on price. They're bought on features and benefits and innovation and performance. And obviously we're really, really good at that. So from a four-wheel drive perspective, obviously we've got some of the toughest terrain in the world and companies that have developed around building and designing product that's fit for our market, and if it can work in our market, it can work anywhere in the world. So, yeah, for instance, I mentioned the US. You know, we're having some, I guess, turbulent times with the tariffs at the moment, but that's that's our biggest market, and about $400 million a year of that 800 goes into the US. But that's an $80 billion industry, the specialty equipment market in the US. And, you know, Australian brands are world renowned. We've got some of the best suspension engineers and products anywhere in the world. So, you know, whether it's fleet vehicles, whether it's defence vehicles or off-roading, or as they call it in the US, overlanding, our products are on vehicles all around the world.
Yeah, it's a very proud time for Australian manufacturers, and I can see that extending well into the future. Something else that has been a major increase that I've noticed, particularly at the Expo this year, but also at recent events in past years, is the number of women in our industry. It's increasing every single time. And there's so many more working within the industry. So the strategies that you've put in place, or that the association and the industry have put in place, seem to be working.
Yeah, look, certainly it's been a big focus of ours. You asked the question about what the industry looked like when I first came in. Well, what I can tell you is we used to have a dinner, and we still have a dinner with 800 of the industry leaders and all the major companies. And I can tell you 20 years ago, the only women in that room were the ones working for our association. It was basically 800 white blokes all in a room together. Now, you know, if you went to our dinner too, which you did 2 weeks ago, you know, it was probably 30% women. And, yep. And by the way, it's not a dinner that people bring their partners. So those no. women are generally working in the industry. So, look, it's changing. We've still got a long way to go. But, I think companies are realising that you're missing out on 50% of the population for a start, but all of that expertise and that perspective that that women bring to the business, and you know they're making their workplaces more gender inclusive and so on, and putting women in more senior roles and recruiting on merit, not necessarily on the old school boys club and so on. So, yeah, and I think that's really benefited our industry. But we've got a lot more work to do. One of the initiatives that we've launched that we're very proud of is a network called AAAA Women. So there's a steering group of led by Leslie Yates in our team, but we've got some key people across the industry that are involved in that, and that's doing great work. So we do an International Women's Day breakfast with a keynote speaker. We have connection circles. So there's different circles of mentoring on different topics and so on. So women that are working in different businesses, mentoring each other and discussing issues and so on. So, and we actually had a AAAA Women event get together for the first time at our expo this year. And I've got to say, it was a surreal experience. I actually went. I was one of the supporters, as you say, but to walk into a room of 120 women, I think there was myself, Wayne Bryant, our chairman, and Nick, who works with our team. We were only three guys in the room, but the smiles on people's faces, the noise level, the networking and support and whatever was incredible, and it was so amazing to see that. And I think we're really just scratching the surface. One area where we've got still a big job to do is in workshops, and particularly technicians. We're still only about 2 or 3% of technicians are women, we've got some of the best some of our best young technicians and apprentices are women. So Chelsea Lawson, who won our Women at the Wheel Award at a dinner the other night, she's an absolute gun. Gabrielle, who worked with one of our directors, Craig Bales, she won the Capricorn Rising Star Award a couple of years ago, and has worked with Triple Eight Racing and so on. So we've got these amazing women apprentices and young technicians that are real role models, but we need to get more women into that side of the industry.
And with every successful female in the industry, word gets around that the industry is not like it used to be. You're not up to your elbows in grease. It's actually quite high tech. There's a lot of innovation, and there's a lot of places you could end up going to, such as F Formula One, for example, so purely by starting off as a technician in the automotive aftermarket industry.
Yeah. And look, I think that's one of the issues that we've got, even taking the gender out of it. We do have a big skill shortage in our industry, and we need to get good young talent into the industry. We need people that are not only good with their hands, but good from a diagnostic and problem-solving perspective. Because as you say, vehicles are now so complex. There's a whole lot of electronic and computerized systems on them. So the process of repair is more now about, you know, using scan tools and laptops and diagnostic troubleshooting rather than kind of the grease monkey type image of the industry of the past. So and we need different skill sets. It can't be the industry of last resort. You know, you can't get into anything else, so go and be a motor mechanic. One of the things that we're doing at the moment, we've just put a working group together to look at the apprentice system and come up with a best practice to try and lobby for that, because we can't have a one size fits all apprenticeship system that's outdated. So there's a whole lot of things, and I think we need to talk up our industry, not talk it down, because it is fantastic, and there are so many different career pathways. It's a global industry. You know, there aren't too many industries left where you can still run your own business. You can work around the world. You know, you can work in motorsport. You can go into other areas of the industry, like in, you know, the product and the sales area. So there are so many career pathways and so many examples of, you know, people that started as apprentices and technicians that, you know, are now captains of our industry. So, you know, we need to sell that story to people, because it is a fantastic industry and one that has different opportunities.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think being able to see it as it is now, as opposed to how it may have looked like many years back, is very, very different indeed. And the opportunities are so much better. So you were able to honour a number of people who have been instrumental in building the industry over its history. And a very special part of the expo is doing that. And we have to give credit to you on your 20th anniversary in the industry. I did mention it at the start. But again, that's a long time, and a long time with the association. And well done to you and to your team. And to watch this growth over the years has been truly exciting and great to see happening. And you keep kicking goal after goal after goal. So well done.
No, thank you. It was a real surprise. I thought I knew everything that went on in this business, but my team were very, very good at keeping that from me. So I was invited up on stage by our chairman, who informed everyone that he was going off script. And he actually invited four of our ex-presidents that were there and four people that I admire greatly in Mark Petter, David Fraser, Graham Scudamore-Smith and Greg Barker. So we had five, well, one current and four former presidents. They got my wife in secretly, and she sat down at the table and then presented an award to me. And, yeah, look, you don't do this, you know, for the accolades and whatever, but, you know, it has been a long and, a passionate journey for me, a labour of love. And it is great to see the growth in the association, but most importantly, the growth in the industry and, you know, look at what a big and healthy and vibrant industry it is today. And, you know, the AAA has helped shape a lot of that environment that's made that happen. And, I've been very fortunate to work with some amazing people on our board and some incredibly talented and motivated, hardworking people in our team. It was great to see the culmination of that. I was very, very proud. It was probably my most proud career moment to date.
Yeah, nice big surprise. You could really see that, but very, very well deserved. And if I could pick one highlight, and I hope it's yours too, was becoming the first country to have right to repair legislation passed at a federal level, even ahead of the United States, who have been talking about it for 20 years, but you managed to get that done.
Yeah, that was some kind of moment. In fact, unfortunately, it happened during COVID, so we couldn't even be in Canberra when it went through Parliament. But, yeah, that took 10 years to get through and to take on the car industry, who are a pretty powerful lobby group with, you know, lawyers at 100 paces and lobbyists and so on. To be the first country in the world, we really did leverage off some of the work that, you know, the Americans and the Europeans had done. But, we were able to really frame it and make it a grassroots campaign. So we've got the industry, again, I was talking about how engaged our industry is and how they work together, and they really got behind that and helped us make that a priority. So a world first. Funnily enough, the US legislation's only just now going through the Senate, so still not through in the US in a national form, only got it in one state. So yeah, very, very proud of that achievement. And in fact, that's now, we've just got off a call with the Treasury Department of the government, and they've actually formed a whole rights repair group now, and they're looking at strengthening and broadening the scope of the our rights repair scheme. But they're also about to launch a rights repair in tractor and farm machinery equipment, and then we expect there'll be other sectors, truck and bus and motorcycle and even, you know, consumer goods like phones and TVs and so on. So yeah, it's I guess it's pretty unique to be part of history. The only time our competition law has been changed for any sector, and the first in the world to get right to repair. So yeah, it is genuinely world leading, and yeah, we've got an amazing team, particularly led by Leslie Yates, who is just a dynamo, and yeah, that's terrific.
And I think it's important to note too that it's still evolving, like things like telematics, and it's evolving to include new technologies. So it's not just stopped or set at the one point where it was initiated. It'll continue to evolve.
Yeah, that's right, and that's what this review is about. So it's 3 years in. Government have indicated that it's resulted in $2.4 billion worth of economic growth in the economy, which is terrific, because, you know, free markets are productive markets and growing markets, but it did need to change, both because there were some design issues initially, but as you say, the technology's moved on since then. So, you know, advanced driver assistance systems, for instance, are now mandatory on all vehicles, and those systems need to be calibrated, and some of that includes dynamic calibration. So you need in-service vehicle data. At the moment, the right to repair scheme only covers vehicles stationary. Telematics, you also mentioned, Paul. That's, you know, the wireless transmission of vehicle-related information between the car and the vehicle manufacturer. I mean, ultimately, car companies will do all the diagnostics and repair through that wireless transmission. So the old OBD, you know, plug-in port will be gone. So we need to make sure that the law keeps up with that technology, and that independent repairers and ultimately car owners have a choice on where they get their car serviced, and that repairer has that access to information regardless of how the information's transmitted.
Well, I think it's astounding that a little old Australia, or a big country, but little old Australia all the way over here, and what we've managed to achieve in the automotive aftermarket industry, and particularly with the Australian Automotive Aftermarket Association, and with you at its helm for the past 20 years. Long may it continue. Thank you for spending your time here on our Talk to Motive podcast, Stuart.
Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And thank you for listening to my Talk to Motive podcast today. Feel free to listen to more episodes on this channel.